is London from Lane London, and you're listening to Codeless.
A lot of startups these days are no-code startups. They just don't know that they're a no-code startup. And really, for me, I think it's a movement. We're really helping people beyond just finding a wedding dress. We're helping them create a life and create that beginning on a positive note and hopefully debt-free. I knew that it was a B2C business and that we were producing a product and a service, but I didn't really understand where the technology piece came in. We're just really trying to bring something to the masses that's been done by not only men by renting tuxedos, but been done by celebrities. One of our slogans is men do it, so why shouldn't women?
Hey there. Welcome to episode 3. This one is special because it celebrates our first hero on Codeless. If you don't understand the definition of a no-code hero, these are non-technical folks who are using no-code tools to build businesses. They are bold in finding ways to create value, often using no-code to jumpstart their journeys. Today's guest is London Carter, co-founder of Lane London. Her company provides members of the sharing economy with a concierge-level service. In spite of all the benefits of no-code, London and her team approach things in a special way, linking behavioral psychology, digital merchandising, and flexible communication to humanize their tech-driven business. This episode holds nuggets of wisdom for other heroes. It also contains valuable context for no-code developers and makers who want to attain product market fit, with a segment of corporate savvy heroes who stand to supercharge much of the future growth of no-code. Let's get to it with an introduction from London Carter.
Hi, my name's London. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Lane London. We are a wedding dress rental company that provides brides the opportunity to wear the dress of her dreams at the price of her dreams. Our motto is love, wed, and return. You shouldn't have to compromise style for affordability, and we make that possible.
I think one of the things that got me interested in no-code as a trend was one of your updates. You've used that term before.
Yeah, and it's really new to me too. I mean, within, gosh, probably the last 9 to 10 months, I really stumbled on it. So Lane London is a wedding dress rental company. Okay. And we provide women an alternative to being able to, or having to spend thousands of dollars on a wedding dress. And I knew that it was a B2C business and that we were producing a product and a service, but I didn't really understand where the technology piece came in. And I was just looking for language to be able to speak to when I was pitching or just speaking to people in regards to Lane London, because I didn't want to call us a tech business because we weren't building any technology and still aren't building any technology. But what I realized is a lot of startups these days are no-code startups. They just don't know that they're a no-code startup. And really, for me, I think it's a movement. And I think it's something that allows founders like myself who don't have that tech background to be able to start a business that is technology-based. Tools have gotten so much more sophisticated. APIs have become more sophisticated. Someone like myself, like I mentioned, can, with absolutely zero developer experience, can go in, create a website, integrate things like scheduling, payment tools, communicating with our potential customers, all without doing a single line of code.
So you just explained how you've used the term no code. And the first time we met, I saw you doing a presentation about Lane London. And I just really thought your pitch about your company was so interesting. It was so cool. So now we're going to dial it back and we're going to come back. And I want to talk about Lane London. Tell us about the business, where it's from, and what it does.
Yeah. So Lane London, we're based out of Atlanta, Georgia. I've lived here for about 10, 11 years. I think Atlanta is probably, I'm a little biased, but we're probably one of the best places to start a startup because we are just so culturally diverse. So we are really taking on the wedding dress, the bridal industry. and flipping it on its head. Everyone's heard of Uber, of Lyft, of Airbnb. They've all embraced the sharing economy. And so we have this whole generation. I'm an older millennial. Now we have the next generation who have grown up with these sharing economy companies. And so as they're getting used to it, something that I realized as I was looking at starting Lane London was it really hasn't hit the bridal industry. Now, there have been a few companies that have, you know, tried to do online wedding dress rentals or consignment, but something that I've realized is there has to be a way to marry together that in-person customer experience of actually going to a place with this online community, because brides are doing research online, they're on Pinterest, they're on Instagram, but they still want to have that in-store experience. So that was something that really was important to me. How can I take the technology and this person who's online looking for their dream dress and take that whole experience that they're having? So it's all about experience over ownership.
At this point in the interview, London and I drifted into a conversation about some of the additional value that her business provides her customers. I wanted to get right into the no-code stack, so I promise we'll get back to this conversation. But for now, let's dig into some of the no-code tools that Lane London uses to make customers happy.
I'm so happy to hear about your business. Okay, let's come back. Now, let's satisfy those folks who just want to hear about tech stacks and whatnot. At the end of the day, you're making a customer like really happy and you're fulfilling the expected and even unexpected desires of your customers. Tell me about your, let's call it if you don't mind, your no-code stack in different parts of your business, from marketing, sales, to product, customer service, and just kind of give us an idea of how it's helped you make customers happy.
Yeah. Man, it's been a lifesaver, especially, you know, we've bootstrapped about 90% of the way. So we've spent probably a little over 200,000 just really getting to where we are now. And a lot of that is because we have to have physical inventory in a physical space. But a lot of that also, we've saved so much money by not having to bring on developers or a CTO.
But that doesn't mean you hate developers, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Just want to make sure they all know because they're listening too.
One of our amazing advisors, she is a developer and she will make a few adjustments on the back end where she's had to come in and change a few lines of code because we are very different and we use a lot of tools very differently than they were made for. It's not 100% no code. We wouldn't have to bring in a developer full-time or even part-time to be on a retainer to be able to do what she does. Something that's really important to bring up is I think no code is really great when you're starting off. So 5 years ago, you wouldn't be able to start a business. You wouldn't be able to create an MVP without bringing on a developer. You know, fast forward to where we are now. I mean, you can use these no-code tools, build an MVP within a month, and within 3 to 6 months, start to see, you know, 5 to 10K in revenue. So I think it's important for people to realize that no-code is, and this is just my personal opinion, no-code is a way to really get started. I definitely think within, you know, the next year, we will need to be bringing on developers and possibly a CTO. But for us, that's not priority right now. Priority for us is maintaining the no-code tools that we have and using them to the best of our ability and the best of their ability. We work with some really great companies, and I'm going to give them some shout outs in a minute, but really great companies that understand what we're doing and that we're doing something very different and disruptive and have been really great to make additions and change things on the back end from their side for us to be able to utilize their tools. So having that relationship with the companies that create these no-code tools, I think is also a vital part of being able to use them to your ability.
So let's get into the stack itself. So give me some examples that you want to share and, you know, shout out your, you know, great partners.
So starting off with marketing, just to back up a little bit, one of the most important things, I think, when you're starting a company, there's two things. To know your customer, to really, really know who that person is, and also product market fit. If you have those two things, you're ahead of 90% of the people who are starting companies. And so early on, we realized for our specific customer, for that woman getting married, she's attending bridal shows, she's online, she's searching, you know, Pinterest for different things, and she gets inundated by emails. So when she goes to these bridal shows, and they're just kind of similar to, you know, any type of show at like a big convention center, and there's multiple booths, she's giving out her email address and receiving tons of emails throughout this whole process while she's planning. So something that we looked at was, how do we set ourselves apart from all of this noise, all of these emails that this person is getting? And we've had the opportunity to work with a company called BoxyChat. So their CEO and founder, Bogdan, he actually came from the bridal industry. So he had a successful exit from a company called Manguin, which was a tuxedo rental company. So it's an online text message marketing platform that allows you to really communicate with your customers via text message instead of email. And so what we found was, by communicating with our potential customers via text message, it humanized us and it gave us that ability to reach them where everyone else was over here trying to reach them via email. We are still here by ourselves reaching them via text message. And their platform's amazing. They work with some really great companies. That's really set us apart. That's one stack. And we have that integrated with our website, both mobile and desktop. And we also have it integrated with another tool that we use, Calendly. Calendly is also Atlanta-based. So we work really closely with Calendly, and that's how we take all of our consultation appointments. So all of our brides book their consultations for when they want to come into the boutique through Calendly. We have that integrated with Voxy, where we understand and know which of our brides are coming. We can text message with them through both of the applications, and it allows us, again, to be able to give them the freedom to either reschedule or communicate with us without it having to be a huge issue. Using Voxy and Calendly have really saved us a lot of time and money and headcount to be able to understand, you know, what our customer wants. We get brides that text message us pictures at all hours of the night of dresses that they find online. So what this does is it really helps us prepare for their appointments. We provide them an option to provide their Pandora's favorite Pandora music station, links to their Pinterest boards, to their Facebooks, so we can really understand who our customer is. I think that it's super important that in this day of age, when there's so many tools out there, both no code and code based, the customer is willing to provide you their information, but in return, you have to provide them a service that's above and beyond. And we've been able to use these no-code tools like Voxy and Calendly to really be able to understand that customer, so it doesn't take us nearly as much time to understand them when they come in our door, which means shorter time that we have to spend with them, but we have more information and we're able to close the sale quicker.
Yeah, one thing that I love, when I look at the website, I know your focus is on the wedding industry, but I almost feel like I can come on your website and ask you anything about my wedding. So basically, you figured out how the industry works. You figured out how the customer interaction process moves along. And you literally, like, when everyone is zigging, you zag and you focus on text messaging. And you know that from the perspective of persuasion, interaction, that this is a better way to interact with your specific customer. But what I really love about you, not only saying that, is that you literally like take that strategy forward and now you integrate it on your website. There's a QR code. So if a bride is on her computer and she's got all the info, she's really interested, but she's got to go, all she has to do is take that QR code and now she can start texting you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have it where, yes, if she's on her desktop, she can take a snap of the QR code and it automatically initiates. She sends the text and it automatically initiates a conversation. While we're small right now, I'm on the other end of those. There is some AI integration built into that. So the first couple text messages are AI, but I'm alerted automatically and I can communicate with her from there. So whether they're working or not, they're text messaging. Whether they're text messaging us or they're text messaging their friends or their family. So having that option to be able to text with me throughout the day, you know, she's, you know, at work, but she's flipping through, you know, images on Pinterest. Oh, I love this. She can shoot it over to me and we just add that to her file. So it's an amazing tool. I think we'll see it a lot more and we are starting to see it. But like you mentioned, and when everyone's over here and there's one or two people on the polar opposite end, it's easy for people to say, okay, well, let's just shift to the other end. But if you don't do it in a mindful way, people aren't dumb. They know what's a bot, what's not a bot, and they appreciate that it's an actual person on the other end of that.
I know you're a business, but I feel like you're a bride's best friend. That's what I feel text messaging would do, because all of a sudden, like, you take a huge headache off and then now you start interacting with them how they want to interact, probably in the best way you can actually build trust and form a relationship. That's really dope. So I'm not a UX expert, but I got to tell you, like, I get your monthly updates. I love reading them because I feel like I'm part of the journey with you, but lately I've seen the website. I remember when you said you were like doing some redesign, and look, I'm not in the market for a wedding dress. Like, I'm married, but you make me want to buy a wedding dress. The website is just beautiful. It's lanelondon.com. I mean, you go in and it's almost like you start dipping your toe in the pool and all of a sudden you're dunked in this beautiful world and experience. Your website kind of sets me up, or sets a customer up, to know that this is going to be such a wonderful experience. Planning a wedding and buying a wedding dress is part of it.
Thank you. And that's what we wanted it to be. Your website is a reflection of who you are as a company and as a brand. And I think a lot of times, especially when it's no code, you feel like you just have to, you know, insert photos into the specific grid or into the specific format. And we realized probably about 9 months ago, and that's when we redid our website, that we didn't want to have just rows and rows and rows of pictures of skinny models wearing our inventory that we get either online or from the designers, because that's not who our customer is. So we decided to completely scrap all of those images and just use real images of our real brides. We've done a few styled photo shoots with some really amazing influencers who are plus size models, but we really wanted our website, when a bride clicks on it, similar to like you said, really feels like Lane London is this diverse and inclusive company that really welcomes people of all ethnicities, shapes, and sizes into our store. So yeah. I think we've done that, and I appreciate your compliment.
So you've mentioned two no-code tools that you use, VoxyChat and Calendly. Is VoxyChat out of Atlanta too?
They are, yes.
Wow, hold on. So two companies in the no-code space that you're using, all out of Atlanta, in a business out of Atlanta. What's in the water in Atlanta these days? Like, tell us about the scene here.
You know, Atlanta is a very special place. I've spent some time out in Silicon Valley in New York. I've been to several startup hubs as well. And I tell you, it's diversity really does make things greater. You can't just make it up. You can't just all of a sudden say, I want X, Y, and Z city to be diverse. It's something that happens organically. It's something I think that has been happening in Atlanta for the last 20, 30 years. We have such rich culture, both in music and politics and just the history, the fabric of who Atlantans are, I think really drives the startup community. I personally work out of Atlanta Tech Village, and I've been there now about 2.5 years, and just being there and seeing how it's evolved over the last 2 years and just the diversity of thought and culture that has come through there is just amazing. To be able to have people working in all different industries come together and bring ideas and be partners and allies for each other. I think it's really hard to get that in places like the Valley in New York.
Tell us about how you got to this point, because there must be some point at which you decided to start on this journey with Lane London. But like, what happened before that eureka point?
Yeah. So I studied political science and communications in undergrad, specifically media and politics. And so I'm originally from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and my family is very involved in politics, and I thought that's where I was going to be. I interned for a senator throughout college, realized that I hated DC and I hated politics, because politics there never turns off, and that just wasn't me. And so I was fortunate enough to have amazing parents who allowed me to pivot through through different industries and jobs, and were really supportive of me and helping me find kind of where I wanted to be. It wasn't until about 3 years ago that I really learned and understood what entrepreneurship was. So I was working for a large company, loved my job. I was working in diversity and inclusion. I was growing my career. My goal was to be that corporate 9-to-5 gal, to do my part to break that metaphorical glass ceiling for women and, moreover, underrepresented women like myself. And that's what I was going to do. I loved having the great salary, having PTO, health insurance, all that stuff. It wasn't until while I was working, I decided to get my MBA. I did Emory's, Goizetta's executive MBA program. So while I was working full-time, I was also getting my MBA. And it was during that time that I had taken an entrepreneurship class. And this was late 2016, early 2017. So there was this one class, Charlie Goetz, who, shout out to Charlie Goetz, he's an amazing entrepreneur, has had multiple successful exits. He's a professor at Emory, as well as a mentor and advisor at Atlanta Tech Village. And so he taught this class. I think it was like the only class in entrepreneurship at the time. And it was kind of like this aha moment, as Oprah calls it, where I put all the pieces together. So fast forward about a year, I decided to take some time off from corporate America. And I was really trying to figure out kind of like what was next for me. I decided to pivot my purpose from being this badass in corporate America to being this badass entrepreneur. And that's when my co-founder and business partner, who's also a longtime friend, had come to me with the larger idea of having a rental business for all things weddings, from the reception to the chairs, to the flowers, to the DJ, having everything kind of in a package where the couple could rent it. But within that was also the dress. One of the key takeaways from business school was to focus on one thing at a time, get really good at that one thing, and then move on. I started doing some research and I realized that there was tons of companies to rent furniture and things like placemats and stuff, but there wasn't a company that was renting wedding dresses. And yeah, there's Rent the Runway, they do bridal dresses, but it's more for like bridal showers and bachelorettes and things like that. There wasn't a company that was allowing you to rent a full-on wedding gown. And that's really kind of what sparked my interest. It was maybe, what, 5 years since Airbnb and Uber and Lyft had really started, somewhere around there. And so you saw these companies that people thought, why would I get in a car with a stranger? Or why would I want to sleep at some random person's house? Why would I want to rent my wedding dress? Just really felt like it fit with them.
So was that the early reaction you got from just people you talked to? Like, what was the reaction when you talked about this business?
A lot of it, though, was, well, why would someone rent their wedding dress? Because it's never been done. You have to remember, I mean, this is something that for hundreds of years, women have gone and got a wedding dress, whether that's from their grandmother or whether that's from this huge boutique, and spent thousands of dollars on something. We're trying to shift people's mindset. And so my thought process was, well, if you can shift people's mindsets into getting in a car with a stranger or staying at someone's house, why couldn't you shift the concept of someone's brain on how they wear their wedding dress? So celebrities have stylists who bring them these gorgeous gowns, and they get to select which dress they want to wear for that evening. They wear the dress for the evening, they get the pictures, and then what do? They don't buy that dress, they don't keep it, they give it back. And so when you think about it, we're just really trying to bring something to the masses that's been done by not only men by renting tuxedos, but been done by celebrities. One of our slogans is men do it, so why shouldn't women?
Yeah, so two things I wanted to add. I think you do it better. And you said something earlier about like breaking a proverbial glass ceiling. It seems to me like you didn't just break the ceiling. You kind of moved out and you built your own tower.
This is a very new concept for the bridal industry. The way that women have been thinking about their wedding hasn't changed very much over the last 100 plus years. So you get engaged, you start shopping for a wedding dress, and what society and what the industry has always told them is you have to select your dress a year before you get married, maybe 9 months before. You have this lag time between picking the dress and then alterations, this whole experience that's so dainty and fragile and sacrimonious. And we've literally taken all of those terms and just put that aside. We are purchasing inventory that is top quality. These dresses are beautiful, but they're not fragile. And the utilization rate, which is huge for us, is much more than just one wear. That's something that we really talk to our brides about, but also people who are interested in learning more about our business, whether that's investors or mentors.
Is there a proportion of your customers that end up wanting to like own the dresses and all that?
We do have brides that aren't sure about renting. And so we looked into that and said, you know, how can we ensure that we are also serving brides who aren't sure about renting? And so we created what's called a bridal buyback program. And this allows a bride to purchase a brand new wedding dress from us. And she has the option before she signs her contract with us, she has the option to get the dress for a certain amount of money, where if she wants to keep it, she'll pay that amount. But if she decides after her wedding that she doesn't want to keep it, she can return it to us and get up to a 40% of her money back.
So with your program, essentially you're freeing people up monetarily and experientially to enjoy all the other things that matter in life or as far as planning a wedding goes.
Absolutely. So over 70% of couples who get married will go into some form of debt while they're planning their wedding. And that's a statistic that I really like to bring up. We see it a lot more in underrepresented communities where they don't have a trust fund or they don't have relatives that are going to put $100,000 aside for their wedding. And so you have a lot of people from underrepresented communities and lower socioeconomic statuses that take out credit cards or loans so they can have this dream wedding for their friends and their family. And a lot of times we see this from the groom's side where he wants to make his bride happy. And so if that includes a $5,000 wedding dress to see her walk down the aisle with a smile, they will do that in any way, even if that means taking on debt. And so it is an area that we really want to hone in on, because I think we have, especially in the United States, this whole crisis of debt over really owning something and paying cash for it. And I think that what Lane London has the potential of doing is helping people realize that you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to be happy. We like to ask them, once they say yes to the dress, what are you gonna do with all that money you saved? And it's everything from, it's, you know, going to a down payment on a home, to putting it aside for my children's education later, to, you know, having an open bar at our wedding. So it's really, you know, hopefully you can see the passion in my voice and my smile, but we're really helping people beyond just finding a wedding dress from them. We're helping them create a life and create that beginning on a positive note and hopefully debt-free.
You talked about no-code tools, and specifically, it seems like those tools really focus on communication and customer service. Are there any other tools that you use?
Yeah, so our CRM is integrated into Stripe. Stripe is an amazing tool that we're able to use and is just super easy. Both for us and our customer. We also use a online phone system called RingCentral. RingCentral has been pivotal to allow us to be able to be on the move. We don't have to sit in our boutique and wait for a call to come. We can communicate also via text through RingCentral. Potentially, there are some opportunities to integrate RingCentral into other things that we use, such as our website. And so we're excited to be able to start looking into that.
So you started somewhere totally different, and now you've transitioned and identified a really cool opportunity in a different space. And you're not just making the most of it, you're redefining the space. This is a journey. And so a lot of times, we obsess as human beings over the overnight successes. What advice would you give another non-technical co-founder?
Yeah. The first piece of advice specifically for a non-technical co-founder is don't feel like you have to bring on a CTO right away. don't feel like you're not legitimate if you don't have a CTO, or even if you have a developer. I think that entrepreneurship has become this like really cool, sexy thing within the last few years. Don't feel like you have to bring someone on right away. And don't feel like if you don't have the money to do it, you have to bring someone on and give them equity. My business partner and I have been fortunate enough not to have to have gone through this, but we know a lot of really awesome CEOs and founders of startups that have brought on CTOs, and it's been probably the worst decision that they'd ever made. That's why we are in this no-code revolution. When you're a startup at anywhere before you've begun to raise money, it's too early to start giving titles like CTO. You don't know what your CTO is going to look like. What you think your CTO is going to look like now is going to look a lot different than when you go to raise a priced round. So as cool as sexy as it would sound to say, oh, I'm a CEO of a company, I have a CTO, don't do it.
So my question for you is, what are the limitations you found with no code? And second, what do you wish no code could do for you that it's not doing today?
I think I kind of touched on it earlier when I was talked about, we have a female developer who helps us out sometimes on things that we can't change from the front end that she needs to do on the back end. I think that's one of the biggest things that no code can't always do. There may be some things that you need to change that do require you to bring someone in. And honestly, I mean, especially another great thing about Atlanta, Georgia Tech's right behind us, right in our backyard. There's some super talented people coming out of there. So if you have a product or solution where you may need some technical assistance, like you can do a lot of it with no code, but you may need someone, I recommend reaching out to some of the other colleges here in Atlanta or wherever you live, because there's some amazing talent there and you don't have to pay them nearly as much as you would if you brought on a CTO or an experienced developer. So, I mean, that's one of the things I definitely recommend.
Imagine if someone could build a no-code tool for you. Like, what would that be? Like, just throw it out there. We don't know what's going to happen, but oh well.
I'm really big on like interpersonal and really bringing that humanizing factor. I think being able to marry no code and like artificial intelligence to really understand kind of what I want to build, because I may not necessarily know what I want to build because I don't have that technical background. I don't know all of the capabilities that come with being able to build something as a developer. So using artificial intelligence to be able to understand and know what we want.
All right. So probably the last question before we round up. We've talked about a couple of things. I've asked you questions and you've been so generous with your answers. What's something you probably wish I had asked you that I haven't yet?
That's a really good question. Some of the biggest lessons that I've learned from starting and running a no-code startup.
Okay.
For me, it's really just resisting the temptation to do what others tell you to do or think that you should do. Whether that's a potential investor, whether that's a potential CTO, someone who wants to join your team, even a mentor or advisor, especially if you're disrupting an industry like we are. You have a lot of people, like they've never heard of a wedding dress rental company. So everyone has ideas and thoughts on what you should do and how you should run your company. And a lot of those may be great ideas, but you really need to be careful not to dilute your attention from what's really important right now. And for us, that's getting customers and ensuring that we have the right inventory. Follow your gut and your instinct. And I think that's super important.
Wow, that takes a lot of guts. I'm going to take that piece of advice myself. Thank you so much for talking to us today. And I really look forward to having you back in some form or fashion. But hey, before we get off, just tell our listeners how they can reach you.
So you can reach us either online or in person. You can find me. I'm at Atlanta Tech Village. On Instagram, it's @Lane_London. London spelled like the city. We're also on Facebook, Pinterest, LinkedIn, or via email. I'll shoot you, Edmund, my contact information. I'm more than happy to share it. More than happy to speak to anyone who has questions or just wants to hear more about our journey.
Yeah, it's a wonderful journey. I'm so glad I met you and we're talking today, and I look forward to continuing that.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that concludes this episode. As usual, after we ended the interview, I asked London for her thoughts on the past decade of no-code and its impact on entrepreneurship, as well as what the future holds for no-code and the ability to start a business. You hear these answers after the closing credits. You can reach me on Twitter through my handle, Codeless Podcast, or on LinkedIn through the same handle. Again, that's Codeless Podcast. Just search for Codeless and Podcast, and you can't miss me. Send us a voice note about this episode through our Anchor page at anchor.fm/codeless. All music provided through free licensing. The music was produced by Raising Sound on soundswap.org, Steph Skilly on looperman.com, and Mark1313 on looperman.com. You can find more information and links in the show notes.
The impact of no-code has been exponential on my business. I started Lane London about 2.5 years ago with zero technical experience. My co-founder also didn't have any technical experience, but because of these no-code tools, we were able to not only start our business, but become revenue generating in less than 2 years, and also without hiring a developer. No-code is a movement. As these tools have gotten more sophisticated and as APIs have become more sophisticated as well, someone like myself with absolutely no experience as a developer can not only make a website, but integrate scheduling, payment tools, and communicate with potential customers without writing a single line of code. So my prediction for no code in the next 10 years is most likely already being thought of by the powers that be, but really, I think what we're going to start to see is no-code platforms becoming more intuitive and more user-friendly. I think we're also going to see artificial intelligence becoming part of no-code platforms and really being able to understand what that non-technical founder or non-technical person is looking for in different tools and APIs. I think it's going to be a lot easier for artificial intelligence to identify those things and help non-technical founders build the businesses and create the ideas and concepts that they're looking to create without hiring a developer.